Good morning and welcome. It's great to have you here for Good Friday. Just want to acknowledge that we're on the lands of the Semi-Amu, Stolo, and Kwantlen peoples, and we're grateful to be part of on this land and living here today. I want to say up front that I didn't write this myself, that I have cobbled it together and used material from the Illustrated Ministry Group to craft this reflection and contemplation. And I hope that it helps us to sit with the story of Good Friday. And I want to encourage you to write as we go, perhaps just the words or other thoughts that you have. Something about writing, even the physical action of using your hand to write, helps us take it from observing and being audience to participating. So I just want to encourage you to write if that helps you do that. It helps me as I listen or doodle or whatever works. And perhaps it might help you too. If you have candles, you could join me and have extinguish one after each word. And the other thing to have to hand is water to drink. We're going to need that for the fifth word. So if you want to get any of that stuff now, please do so.
Okay.
And then I'll get going. Okay. Jesus had a lot to say during his life about who God is and about what justice looks like, about how we are to love ourselves and our neighbors and all the world. The last seven words are the sayings of Jesus from the cross as recorded in the gospel narratives. Some of them pull from his ancestors' prayers and songs, reminding us of his deep rootedness in his Jewish tradition. Some of them echo themes that he taught, like connection and compassion. Some of them remind us just how very human he was. And many of them are words that we might hear from the mouths of people in our world today, innocent people who suffer unjustly. But God with us continues to this moment and continues with us from the moment on the cross to now, to beyond. Let's pray. Empathetic God, you came to earth to show love. May we see you sitting next to us in our fear, in our hardships, and in our pain. By your presence, we know your love. By your wounds, we are healed. Remind us when we are hurting that you know the way to healing. Remind us that you are with us, even with the difficult things, so that we might be present to others when they have pain too. Amen. Okay, our first word is no. And Rick is going to read that to us.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. The crucifixion of Jesus. As the soldiers led him away, they seized Simon of Cyrene, who was on his way to from the country in from the country, and put the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. A large number of people followed him, including women who mourned and wailed for him. Jesus turned and said to them, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your children, for the time will come when you will say, 'Blessed are the childless women, the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if people do these things when the tree is green, then what will happen when it is dry?" Two other men, both criminals, were also led out front with him to be executed. When they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him there along with the criminals, one on his right and the other on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing." And they divided up his clothes by casting lots.
Thanks, Rick. So our first word is no. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. When someone tosses a piece of garbage on the ground, it's hard to see how something so small can make a difference. But when the wind picks up that garbage, carries it far from where it was tossed, into the woods or out to the ocean, where a curious creature crawls up to it or swims near it and gets tangled up in it, the creature loses its ability to crawl or swim. The person who tossed the garbage never intended for that to happen, but rarely can we know all that might unfold from our actions. So thinking about those in the midst of climate crisis, thinking of the creatures that are suffering because of the crisis we are causing. Jesus knew this. He knew this even about people who were part of his last moments, moments that were filled with pain, sorrow, and hurt. He knew they didn't understand what they were doing, that they were caught up in lies they didn't recognize they'd been told, that they didn't fully understand their actions. He also knew that if they challenged those instructions, they could be punished, they could lose their jobs, they could be outcast from their community. They were trapped like he was, and they might not even have known it. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. In that moment, Jesus showed grace. He offered mercy, and he spoke forgiveness. Jesus knew that not even the choices people made in these moments could separate them from God's love. Nothing can separate us from the love of God. Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. I'm going to blow out the first candle. Our second word is truth, and Fran is going to read this one to us.
One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us. But the other criminal rebuked him. Don't you fear God, he said, since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong. Oh, sorry, I went too far.
No, that's okay. Can you do the next line too?
Then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus answered him, truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise.
Thanks, Fran. So the word is truth. Truly I tell you. Truly I tell you, you will be with me in paradise. When the man makes this request of Jesus, and when Jesus responds, the two are together in a terrible moment. So I want to think for a second. Have you ever shared a moment of sadness or fear or pain with someone else? Maybe write their name down. Seeing someone else struggle can deepen our own struggle. Maybe that's why we sometimes look away when those around us are hurting. But seeing another person struggle can also help us. It can reassure us that we're not alone in our pain. It can connect us to each other in important ways. And instead of increasing our hurt, it can lessen it. There's this old saying that suggests that sharing a sorrow halves it, but sharing a joy doubles it. The promise here is that though Jesus and this other man share their struggle in this scene, they will also be together in paradise. That is, in the place of joy and delight. The promise is this: it's some sort of transformation is coming. We don't know much about what Jesus thought would happen after death. He doesn't actually talk about it very much. We know differing branches of Judaism of his time had different ideas about what life after death might be like. But we do know that he prayed and taught his disciples to pray that God's will and God's power and God's love would be made real on earth as it is in heaven. And maybe by offering that promise of peace and paradise to this man by his side, Jesus was helping to make that thing real where he was right there. So if you can imagine yourself back with the person that you thought of where you shared a moment of sadness or fear or pain, what truth might you speak to them if you could be in that moment once again? Just like Jesus said, truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. What would you say to that person? Jesus' third word was truth. Second word, sorry, was truth. The third word that Jesus spoke is here. And Jeff, you know, read that one for us.
John 19:25-27. Standing near the cross were Jesus' mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother standing there beside the disciple he loved, he said to her, "Dear woman, here is your son." And he said to this disciple, "Here is your mother." And from then on, this disciple took her into his home.
So Jesus said, "Here is your son." Thanks, Jeff. "Here is your mother." He didn't say thanks, Jeff, but he said, "Here is your son. Here is your mother." With these words, Jesus continues some of the most important work that he did in his life, even as he's dying. He turns people towards each other and he offers them to each other. It's what he did when he called disciples, taught and trained them and sent them out two at a time to teach and to heal. It's what he did when his relatives came looking for him, when he was attracting a lot of attention, drawing a crowd. When people said, "Your mother and your brothers are outside looking for you," Jesus expanded the notion of family, widening it to an idea beyond those to whom he was related, to include everyone that he was with, saying, "This is my family. All who do the will of God are my family." And from the cross, Jesus sees perhaps the two people who love him most, his mother and his dear friend, both in so much pain. And with some of his very last words, he gives them to each other. Jesus knows that they are both going to need each other in the days to come. They are entering into deep sadness, real anger, and lots of questions without answers. He knows that surviving this is going to be hard. So he gives them to each other so they might say, "Do you remember when? Do you remember when Jesus? Do you remember Jesus doing?" And then tell stories. When Jesus asked his mother and his friend to look toward each other, he's instructing them, "This is where your attention should go. If he were with you, sitting next to you right now, where would he turn your attention? Who might he want you to reach out to share a story with today? Write their name down. And then consider how you might turn towards them in the near future, or today even. We'll just take a minute to allow us to reflect on who this might be. Here is your son. Here is your mother. Here." What? Not the third candle. Our fourth word is forsaken. Feeling forsaken could cause a lot of anxiety. And sometimes difficult feelings can change the way that our heart beats. Notice your heart beating right now. Maybe place a hand on your chest to feel your heart beating, or put it on your wrist or your neck to feel your pulse. And offer yourself compassion for the moments when you felt alone as we listen to the next part of the story from Matthew that Amy's going to read us. Go ahead, Amy.
Matthew 27:45-46. "Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land unto the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, 'Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani,' that is to say, 'My God, why hast thou forsaken me?'"
Thanks, Amy. So the word is forsaken. "Why have you forsaken me?" This is a hard one. It is hard to understand, and we could be mistaken for thinking that God is stepping away from Jesus, but that isn't how it was. Jesus is God. And we know God through Jesus. People felt God's love and grace and healing just by being near him. He cries out in pain, "Why have you forsaken me?" But God is still with him. It's just it doesn't feel like it. He seems to be asking, is there any sense in this suffering? Or for that matter, is there any sense in any suffering? The Jews who heard him cry out would know the rest of the psalm. They knew what came after this line, my God, why have you forsaken me? And it's not the whole of it. It's just the question that sets up the next bit that says, yet you are holy, enthroned on the praises of Israel. In you our ancestors trusted. They trusted you and you delivered them. To you they cried and were saved. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. These words hint that all is not lost. That God, who's journeyed with God's people through all of history, is still by their side now, even in the depths of despair. That truth doesn't take away pain, it doesn't take away despair, but it does let us know that this pain is part of a longer, larger, unfolding story. It doesn't answer the question why, but it does answer the question where. Where is God? Where is our hope? And the answer, even when we know nothing else, is always here. So as our prayer, let's turn our hearts and our thoughts towards the war-torn parts of our world. There are many places to choose from. Gaza, Congo, Haiti, Ukraine. There's probably more. We can almost hear their cry, "Why have you forsaken me?" Where is God? God is under the rubble. God with us here. Why have you forsaken me? Let's be quiet for a moment. Our fifth word is thirsty. If you have water, take your cup of water and before you drink it, first look. I'm hoping that it's clear, that it's clean. Smell the water. I'm hoping you smell nothing. Taste the water. Take another sip and just hold it in your mouth before you swallow. And then Lando or Kathy, you wanna, I can't remember which one of you is going to read this next one. If you could just read us the next bit. Lando.
Jesus knew that everything was now finished, and to fulfill the scriptures, he said, "I am thirsty."
I am thirsty. I wonder if people around Jesus were surprised when they heard him say that. I wonder if they were expecting something more profound when he began that sentence. Earlier in the same story in the Gospel of John, he's been heard saying, "I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the good shepherd. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the true vine." I wonder if when he said, "I am," the people around him leaned in, thinking that they might get one more revelation, one more metaphor, one more saying that would shed light on just who Jesus was. But what they heard was his humanity. "I am thirsty." Maybe they felt relieved. Here finally was an "I am" statement that they could relate to. They knew what it meant to be thirsty. Access to fresh water is a privilege that not everyone has. There are many parts of this country under a boil water advisory who have been that way for many, many, many years. This is so wrong. There are parts of this world where the only water available is contaminated and unsafe. These people thirst not only for water, but for justice. In this story, someone wet a sponge in a jar of sour wine and held the sponge to Jesus' lips. They heard his statement as a request for liquid, and they met it. But I wonder, even after this gesture, if Jesus was still thirsty. I wonder if he was thirsty for justice and for righteousness. That is, for a world in which everyone has what they need and no one suffers at the hands of another. Like the prophet Amos prays, that justice will flow like water, like an ever-flowing stream. I wonder if he was thirsty for living water, like he'd offered to the woman at the well when he told her who he was. I wonder if he was thinking about the way water dedicates people to God, like in baptism, or the way that water helps people serve each other, like in foot washing. I wonder if he was remembering his own baptism with his friend John, with the voice of God calling him beloved. I wonder if he was in these most difficult and lonely moments yearning for some kind of connection like that. And so he said, "I am thirsty." And I wonder how we can help answer those people in our world today who are thirsty. Thirsty for water, for connection, or for justice. I am thirsty. Let's just pause for a minute and ask for justice for those who need it, for water for those who need it, and for connection for those that need it. I am thirsty. Lord, have mercy. Our sixth word is finished.
A jar full of sour wine stood there, so they put a sponge full of the sour wine on a hyssop branch and held it to his mouth. When Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, "It is finished." And he bowed his head and gave up his spirit.
Thanks, Kathy. It is finished. But what is finished? It's not Jesus's ministry, because the disciples were there to carry that on. It's not his teachings, because here we are thousands of years later still telling his stories. It's not his presence, because he promised that his presence continued with us when two or three were gathered in his name. It's not his love, because we are assured that nothing can separate us from the love of God, not life, not death, not anything in the world. So what is it to be finished? And what was finished right there? The question becomes a little more complicated when we think about what can be meant by finished. Is this a good thing? like when someone who's been sewing a quilt or writing an essay can announce proudly that the work is done? Or is it a thing to be mourned, like when a friend decides to go their separate ways, or when a neighborhood store closes its doors for the last time? Maybe Jesus means this incredible moment of God on earth with people as one of us. Maybe that's what's finished here. In Jesus, God was born like any one of us. He lived and learned and ate and drank and danced and cried like all of us. And here he died like so many of his time died. Maybe the crucifixion is the finishing of God's experiment in a human body. If that's what it is, maybe this ending is both a good thing and a thing to be mourned. We can celebrate it. We can celebrate that it was. We can celebrate that it happened, that God journeyed alongside people like us, prayed with them and joked with them and cared for them and let them take care of him too. We can celebrate that God made friends with us, that God understands what it is to be one of us in a body in the world. We can celebrate that people kept and told and collected the stories so that even though we're in a very different time and space, we can know something of what it was like. And we can mourn. We can mourn that it ended the way it did, that people didn't understand the miracle right in front of them. We can mourn that those in power were so scared of the challenge that Jesus spoke that they let their fear win out over their hope. Just for a moment, and they ordered his crucifixion instead of considering his call to live in a new way. We can mourn that in too many ways and in too many places still today, fear wins over hope. When we turn our backs or close our doors to those in need, when we don't speak up against the cruelty we see and the things that we hear around us. Perhaps we can be finished with letting fear win in our hearts and minds and lives and community. Maybe like Jesus's followers, we can find ways for hope and justice and the life-changing message of his love to carry on. Let's just pause and consider how we might ensure the story and love of Jesus aren't finished where we are. Jesus said, "It is finished." Now we come to the last word and the final phrase, which is commend. As Jesus commends his spirit to God, there is a sense in which his spirit is released from him. As Steve reads this last bit to us, just think about something that you might need to commend or release to God as we read these last few verses. Okay, Steve.
Luke 23, verses 44 to 46. It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. For the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." When he had said this, he breathed his last.
Thanks, Steve. Where does your spirit go? Who holds it? The word is commend. Into your hands I commend my spirit. The language of this last word says what it says, but it also says so much more. It's a hint of a much bigger story. Into your hands I commend my spirit. Jesus isn't the first to speak these words. He didn't compose this line as he drew his last breath. This statement is a prayer of his people from the 31st Psalm, which longer says, "In you, O Lord, I seek refuge. Do not let me ever be put to shame. Incline your ear to me, rescue me quickly. Take me out of the net that is hidden for me, for you are my refuge. Into your hands I commend my spirit. You have redeemed me, faithful God." These last words are not words of giving up. Jesus doesn't speak them and just hang his head. These are fighting words. He uses his last breath to make sure that he is heard. And with these last words, Jesus speaks to the empire around him that is killing him to say, I do not belong to you. I do not belong to your violence, even though your violence is killing me. I do not belong to your fear. I belong to God, and into his hands I commend my spirit. Jesus said it, but he wasn't the first to say it, and he wasn't the last to say it either. People all over the world continue to speak these words. They're inspired and they are defiant whenever they trust that God's promises are stronger than whatever terrible circumstances they are facing. People say these words whenever they create hope for those around them. Hope that what currently is doesn't always have to be. The crucifixion. This part of Jesus's story is terrible. Just like any murder is terrible. And it's unjust. Like any execution is unjust. And it's heartbreaking, like every loss is heartbreaking. And this horror, this injustice, and this heartbreak, it's part of the old story, and sadly, very much still part of our stories today. So where does your spirit go? Who holds it? The one that we mourn on Good Friday said to the one who was always with him, "Into your hands I commend my spirit." These words are offering and they are reunion. They are remembrance. These are the words his people have spoken for generations, and they are reverence. These are the words with which he acknowledges that he is not his own, and they are resistance. These are the last words from the cross, and with them Jesus says, "This is not the last word." So the last word is commend, which could be to give up, but is more likely to surrender, to entrust, and to commit. So is there something or someone or a situation that you want to commend and entrust to God? Let's just pause for a minute so you can tell him about that. Is there someone or something or a situation that you want to commend or entrust to God? Into your hands, I commend my spirit. Blow out the last candle. And although all our candles are now blown out, this is not the end of the story, but this is the end of today's story. Tomorrow is Holy Saturday, which is a day of mourning and silence and waiting. And then there will be Easter Sunday. But let's not rush there too quickly. Let's sit with the horrors of what humans can do to each other and be with Jesus on his last day as he is very much with us. Let's just close in prayer. Empathetic God, you meet us in our pain, our brokenness, and our fear because you remember what it's like to be human. We praise you for remembering us as we remember you. And even if we are still broken, we know that we are not alone. Thank you for the hope of a new tomorrow. In Jesus' name, amen.